glad that I am here. Brother was correct in regarding the ice storm. I didn't know whether I was going to make it out to the main highway or not, but I did. And then about the first 20 miles was kind of slick. But the farther south I got, the better the weather. I like this. This is nice here. Who knows? I may move down this way sometime. I don't know. I'm kind of familiar with West Virginia, so it's good to be with you. What I'm going to ask you to do, since we're limited in time here, is come with me to Matthew chapter 24. I want to look at a couple of things in Matthew chapter 24. Then we're going to move into chapter 25 of the book of Matthew. Matthew chapter 23, 24, and 25 actually is kind of a unit that you can study together. As you begin chapter 24 all the way through chapter 25, what you have is a continual discourse between Jesus and his disciples here. And you'll remember that in Matthew chapter 23, Jesus, as he's addressing the Pharisees and scribes and so forth in that chapter, he's in the temple area. And as he leaves the temple area, notice what he says at the end of chapter 23, in verse 37, he says, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her, how often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I say unto you, you shall see me no more, till you say, Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." Jesus, at this point, understands that his work is nearly done. Israel, as a whole, has rejected him. He came into his own, and his own received him not. And this is the last time he will be at the temple. And as he's leaving the temple, the disciples are very excited to show him just how a magnificent a temple this is. It took Herod over 46 years to reconstruct this temple, and they were pointing these things out to Jesus. And notice what he says in verse 1. It says, "Then Jesus went out and departed from the temple. His disciples came up to him to show him the building of the temple. And Jesus said to him, Do you not see all these things? Assuredly I say to you, not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down." Now, just for a moment, put yourself in their shoes. Here they're pointing out just how magnificent a temple this is. And Jesus says, look, I want to tell you that there's not going to be one stone left upon another. Everything that you see here is going to be destroyed. And of course, we know the history. We know that by AD 70, the temple was destroyed, and there was not one stone left upon another. As Rome was looking for gold, they just tore that temple to pieces. But they were taken back. How could this be? How could this temple eventually be destroyed? And in their mind, they're thinking, well, if the temple is destroyed, that means that's the end of Judaism. And if all this takes place, that certainly would have to be the end of the world. And so that's the questions they asked Jesus. Notice here, as they come to the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, verse 3, saying, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the world, or the end of the age?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you." And so he begins here in chapter 24 to give these signs in regard to the forthcoming destruction. And as you come down through the chapter, he points out what's going to transpire before the temple is actually destroyed. But as you come to verse 36, you have a transition. Because remember, they equated the destruction of this temple with the end of the world. So when were these things going to be? Well, he gave them signs regarding the destruction of the temple. Now he transitions to the second part of their question, and that is, when is the world going to end? When are you going to come in judgment and so forth, the final judgment? And he says in verse 36, "But of that day and hour, knoweth no one, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So notice this. The transition here takes place. He's now moved on to this next subject, the end of the world. He said when that takes place, no one knows. There are not going to be any signs in regard to the destruction of the world, the end of the world, and my coming and final judgment. No one knows when that's going to happen except my Father, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Now notice here, as we go on. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them away, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. Now let me ask you, were the folks or the people in Noah's day, were they caught off guard? Yes. Yeah, Mo Hafey would say, shake your head like this. Yes, they were. They were marrying and giving in marriage. The sun came up in the east and set in the west until what happened? The flood. Okay? I know you knew the answer to that. Don't be afraid to answer. There's no wrong answers here. You can even disagree with me if you want to be wrong. Okay? I get that. But they were caught off guard. Should they have been caught off guard? No. No. What did they not heed? The message, the warning. Who preached that message? Noah did. Okay? So they shouldn't have. So what should they have been doing? They should have been watching or making preparation. That's right here. Preparation, as was Noah. Okay? But they didn't do that. Now, notice what Jesus says here next. As we come down to verse 42, he said, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. What did he mean by that? Well, we just kind of explained. Pardon me here. Be ready. Make preparation. Make sufficient preparation. Okay? I didn't do that last night. I got caught off by the ice storm. Caught off guard by the ice. Well, I knew it was coming, but I'm thinking, the road crews will be out there. It's going to stop at 4 o'clock. You know how accurate the weather is. It's going to stop by 4 o'clock. They'll have everything ready to go. And I get up and I look out and I'm thinking, oh my. And I said, well, maybe I'll just text Nathan and let him know, you're on your own, bud. Because I can't get out of the driveway. But I said, yeah, I'm not going to do that to him. And I told my wife, I said, I'm going to try to make it out to the main highway. They surely have. And they did until I got 10 miles down the road. And then it was slick. Okay? Until I got to Lisbon. Then it was pretty good from Lisbon on. I wasn't what? I wasn't prepared for all that. That ice storm, in some ways, caught me off. But look, do we know when the Lord's coming? I don't know either. We just don't know. So we need to what? Need to watch, he said. We need to prepare. And that's what the idea is here. We need to prepare. We need to make ready. Now, he's going to bring this to our attention again. Watch, therefore. Now, again, he's not saying stand outside and look and gaze up into the sky. And that's not how this works. He's making, just as Brother Harold said, what he's wanting us to do is make sufficient preparation so that we're not caught off guard. Because one of two things are going to happen in your lifetime. You're either going to pass from this life, it's appointed unto man once to die, and after this the judgment, Hebrews 9, verse 27, or the Lord's going to come. And we need to be ready for either one of those events. And so we make preparation, and that's what he wants us to understand. Matter of fact, if you read the rest of this chapter, he'll talk about that very thing, making that preparation and how there'll be two women at the mill and so forth. One will be taken, one left. In other words, one will be what? One will be ready, the other will not. So we're going to fall into one or two of those categories. We're either going to be ready or we're not going to be ready. Which one do you want to be? You want to be ready, okay? You want to be ready. You do not want to be caught off guard here. Now, we don't know when he's going to come, but that shouldn't stop us from being ready. Now then, as we come into chapter 25, he doesn't leave us in the dark concerning this preparation. First of all, he's going to give us two parables, and then he's going to sum this lesson up at the end of this chapter. This first parable teaches us that we need to take this personally. By the way, I just stubbed my toe there. You didn't have these last time I was here, did you? What are you doing? You don't take an old guy and change things up on him, okay? But we need to take it personally. Notice how he gets this point across. And by personally, I mean, if we're going to make it to heaven, and we're going to be ready for that event in our lives, then I must take it personally, because if I'm going to make it to heaven, I'm not going to make it on your spiritual capital. I have to prepare myself. Now, I can help you, and you can help me, but the bottom line is, who's going to be responsible? Me. That's right. I am. Now, notice how he gets this point across. He's already taught, you make sufficient preparation. Then, verse 1, the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps, went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise, 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps, took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight a cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming, to go out to meet him. Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and for you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other virgins came, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. Now, he presents this scenario. He gives this parable, and it would have been one with which they were very familiar. It would not have been unusual for the bridegroom to what? To delay his coming. Okay? And with that in view, what should those foolish virgins have done? They should have been prepared. The wise were. What did the wise do that the foolish did not do? They took that sufficient amount of oil and so forth, so that if he delayed his coming, they would be prepared for that. Okay? Now, some say, I've heard some say that, well, this is a lesson in benevolence, and these wise virgins should have shared their oil with the foolish, and so they weren't very considerate. But that's not what this lesson's about. That's not what Jesus is teaching here. What's he teaching? Be ready. Be ready. Who should be ready? Everyone should be ready. Okay? Everyone. should be ready. In case who delays your coming? The bridegroom. Who? And when you think of this, who's the bridegroom? Jesus is far away. And we don't know when he's coming. Could be today. Are you ready? Could be tomorrow. Am I ready? Could be next week. Am I ready? Could be next year. All right? Am I ready? The older I get, the more I think about this. Okay? All right? And don't ask me how old I am. I will tell you. But then, as they said, I don't have to kill you. Okay? So, but no, I wouldn't even do that. I'm not old as some, but I'm a whole lot older than that little baby that they were just showing me here. By the way, he was born on my birthday, so that gives you know how many days you have shopping days left now. Okay? So he and I can celebrate together. Well, I forget, is it he or she? Anyway, we'll celebrate together. Little he, isn't it? Little girl? There you go. All right. Little girl. But anyway, I need to be ready. That's what Jesus is teaching here. I need to be ready. Because if I'm going to be ready for that event, it's not going to be based on the spiritual capital of someone else. It's going to be based on my readiness and my willingness to make that sufficient preparation so that I don't get caught off guard. Bridegroom delayed his coming. So how's he sum this up? What's he say again, verse 13? Watch there for you what? You do not know, okay? You do not know the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. What happens to us is we're kind of like the skeptics that Peter. Did you know that the only formal argumentation given in the New Testament for the second coming of Christ is found in 2 Peter chapter 3? It was a given. It's mentioned quite a bit, quite often, as a matter of fact. You can't go through 1 Thessalonians and so forth. And then Paul deals with it again in 2 Thessalonians without being impressed with the fact that the Lord is coming. But there's no formal argumentation given until you get over to 2 Peter chapter 3. And what Peter is doing is answering the skeptics. Because they basically are saying, look, where's the promise of his coming? Where is he? Sun still comes up in the east and it sets where? It sets in the west. Okay? And day in, day out, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days in a year. And it just keeps going. The cycle continues. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? And that's what happened here. So what Jesus is teaching is this. You do not know the day nor the hour in which I am coming. So you make sufficient preparation. Don't get caught off guard as they did in the days of Noah. Okay? All right, let me pause here before we go on to the next point, because he doesn't leave us in the dark here concerning what's involved in making this preparation. Anything you want to add to what we've said thus far? There's a lot just in this parable, but for the sake of time, I'm moving rather quickly. Anything you want to add? Yes. It's life. Yes. And I know a little bit about that, as we all do here. Yeah, my son was 16. My oldest daughter was 39. My wife was 45. So you're right. You're absolutely right. We can be lulled into thinking that everybody's going to live as old as that guy up there standing right now. But that is far from the truth. We just do not know. That's why we need to take this to heart. You know, I made it here, and I'm thankful I did this morning without any events, you know, it was uneventful. But I don't know about going back home. We all plan on it. I have a business meeting this afternoon at 4 o'clock, and I plan on being there, but I don't know. So once I get home, I got to travel another 25 miles to where we worship. And so you don't know. You just don't know. That's a good point. Anything else? Okay, if you do, speak up. Okay. See? All right, speak up loudly. So, and my wife's after me. She says, why don't you go to the VA and get, that's because I, VA, I'm nothing against veterans. I'm a veteran myself. The VA, I don't want a heart transplant to get hearing aids, if you know what I mean. So, all right, let's go on here, because notice what else he does. The next parable teaches us something as well. He is building on something here, and notice as we continue here, he's not left us in the dark in regard to, all right, you take this personally. You need, every one of us is responsible for making this preparation. Now notice here what he says. Here's how it's done. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on his journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. And likewise he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground, hid his Lord's money. After a long time the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents beside them. And his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also had received 2 talents, came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents besides them. And his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you had not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reaped where I had not sown, gathered where I had not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. Therefore take the talent from him, give it to him who has 10 talents, for to everyone who has more will be given, to him who has abundance, but from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. Cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And when the Son of Man comes in his glory with all his holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. So notice this parable, because it builds upon the first one. He said, you take this personally, as we would say. Understand that each one is responsible for making sufficient preparation. But here's how it is done. So I'll give you the floor here. Tell me what he is teaching us here in regard to how this is done. I have to make sufficient preparation. What do I need to do? utilize the I like that. Utilize the talent that he has given to us. He said, here's what I have given you according to your ability. So sometimes we use the word talent synonymous with the word ability. But that Jesus isn't being redundant here. He's not saying I gave one five ability according to his ability. He is saying what? I'm giving you five talents according to your ability. I'm giving you two according to your ability and you one according to your ability. So what are we saying here? What's he saying? What's he teaching us here? He's already said, you make sufficient preparation. Now here's how you do this. You do it according to your ability. We'll establish that. So he's not asking me to do any more than I'm what? Able to do. Okay? Isn't that a blessing? I'm glad. I'm glad he hasn't asked me to do any more than I'm able to do. According to my ability. But in that regard, he does expect that much of me. So whatever my ability allows me to do as I make this preparation, he expects me to utilize that ability to accomplish the talents that he has given me. What's the talent then? Okay, what has he given me, Harold? All right, he's given me the ability. Okay, all right. The ability to do something. What is that something? Pardon me? It is. We are, what's Ephesians 2:10 teach me? We are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus unto, there it is, there's the talents. He has given me work to do according to my ability. Okay? You have any song leaders? So they exercise their ability and carry out that work, right? You don't want me as, I can lead singing, but I'm kind of like the brother in Barnesville, Ohio, when I was down there holding a meeting one time. He said, they asked me here if I could sing tenor. And I told them yes, and they said, okay, good, would you sing 10 or 12 miles from here? All right. What's he saying? Maybe that's not his, he doesn't have that ability. Carol? Yes. Yes. Yes, that's a good point, Carol. And that's what we're driving at. That's what he's driving at here. So one, we're all going to have different ability. So if I have a great deal of ability, I may be given more work to do. I need to find out what that is. That means I got to be intellectually honest with myself and then carry out that work that he's asked me to carry out. Now, we're going to sum this up. We've got about 7 minutes here because we're going to let the Lord sum this up for us. But you're on track here. Now, let's put these two parables together here. One builds upon another. Watch therefore, he said, for ye do not what? Don't know when I'm going to be returning. Don't know when the end of the world is going to take place. So what? Make sufficient preparation. Who's responsible for doing that? First parable teaches us, I am. So I need to be a wise virgin here. I need to equate to that individual. He brings our attention there. All right? Not foolish. Not depending on someone else to do this for me, because that's not going to happen. Now we can help one another, and I get that. And a lot is said in the scriptures concerning that. But the bottom line is, as we've already established, as the Lord has established for us, I'm responsible. How do I go about doing this? I must understand that in the kingdom there is work for me to do according to my ability. Okay? And I'm glad that He doesn't ask of me any more than what my ability will allow me to accomplish in the kingdom. But I must understand that I'm responsible for that. Now, you'll notice this. At the end of this parable, the three are called into account for what the Lord has what? Given them. And that aptly describes how we will stand before God on judgment. You know, as you look at this overall, you make an investment here. And the one doubles his, and the other one doesn't, but he doesn't lose it. So that's a pretty good investment, right? All right. Now, don't follow my investments. Because I always tell folks, if I invested in water, the earth would be Mars tomorrow. Okay? But that's not how we're going to be judged. That's not how this works. Now, we will be judged on how we got along with and worked with others in a collective effort. I understand that. But the bottom line is, I'm going to be responsible for myself. Because, as Paul said, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ and give an account of the things that we've done in this body, whether they be good or bad. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10. And Paul said also in Romans 2, verse 16, in the day when God shall judge even the secrets of men through Jesus Christ according to my gospel. So we're going to stand there as individuals and give an account. Did I utilize my ability? Did I do what He asked me to do? Again, that's where I have to be intellectually honest with myself. But I must understand that He requires something of me. That's how we make preparation. All right? Now, notice how He sums this up, because He doesn't leave us in the dark. He doesn't give us an itemized list here. But the point of this last section is there's work to be done. Notice, this, when the Son of Man comes with His holy angel, verse 31, okay, verse 32, all the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. He will set the sheep on His right, the goats on His left. Then the king will say to those on the right hand, come, blessed are my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was naked and clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry, feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger, take you in, and naked and clothe you? And as we finish up here, there were those who did not do this. And what happened to them? They were punished, okay? So the point of this is that there is work to be done in the kingdom. Who's responsible for that work? I am. How do I make this preparation? By engaging in that work. Okay? Again, I go back to Ephesians 2 and verse 10. We are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works. Now let me ask you this, because we stop at 20 of, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah, you're a member here. Oh, yeah. Okay, all right. All right. So we stop at 20 of, right?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Okay, so now you made me lose my thought here. Yeah, don't ever do that again. Well, that train went off the track pretty quick. Here's what I was going to do. So where do we find those good works that we're to engage in? the Scriptures. How do we know that? The Scriptures teaches us that, right? All Scripture is given by what? And is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be thoroughly furnished unto every good work. So those good works are found here. You know what we need to do? We need to study God's Word, 2 Timothy 2:15. Find out what those good works are. And if I have the ability to engage in that good work and carry that good work out, what's my responsibility to do it? Time, opportunity, and ability equals responsibility. Okay? So notice this. All right, we got a minute. Notice this. Look what Jesus did here. He did not just answer their question, but he builds upon this, their concerns, in regard to you do not know the hour in which the world will come to an end, nor the day and the hour when the bridegroom comes. Watch therefore. Take it personally. You're responsible for doing this. God's given you work to do according to your ability. Engage in it. That's how you make preparation so that you're not caught off guard. 30 seconds. Anybody want anything to say? From a physical, we have been created in His image. God created us to work, both physically and spiritually and so forth. Okay, sir. Thank you. Appreciate your kind attention.